This is Kes returning with the Decatur Herald and Review dated March 7th, 2016. We will continue now with the death notices. Alright, so the first one is Mary Adams Burnworth Moequa. Mary K. Adams Burnworth, 59, of Texaco, died March 4th, 2016 in her home. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 9th, 2016 in Seeds Funeral Home Moequa. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 8, 2016, also in the funeral home. Burial will be in Adams Gordon Cemetery, Moequa. Memorials may be made to Celtic Hospice Care. Preceding her in death are her parents and brothers, Isom and Jim Adams. Seat's Funeral Home, Moequa, has been entrusted with the care and service arrangements. Condolences for the family may be left at www.seitzfh.com. Alma F. Hoke, Clinton. Alma F. Hoke, 67, of Clinton, Illinois, passed away 4 p.m. March 4, 2016 at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center, Bloomington, Illinois. Services will be 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 8, 2016 at Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, Illinois, with Jim Kilson officiating. Burial will follow at Pleasant Valley Cemetery, Kenny, Illinois. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to Lane Christian Church or the donor's choice. Online condolences may be made at www.calvertmemorial.com. Funerals pending. Austin Robert M., 82, Decatur, died Saturday, March 5, 2016, Dawson and Wyckoff Westwood Street Funeral Home. Barr, Annabelle, 96, Decatur, died Saturday, March 5, 2016, Morin and Goebel Funeral Home. Carter Leona, 87, Decatur, died Sunday, March 6, 2016, Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Kennedy Edith, 95, Decatur, died Saturday, March 5, 2016, Walker Funeral Service. Lucas Aldona, L., 98, Decatur, died Sunday, March 6, 2016, Morin and Goebel Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Schmidt Mildred M., 96, St. Marie, died Saturday, March 5, 2016, Meyer Funeral Home, Newton. Winnings Leroy, 75, Bethany, died Sunday, March 6, 2016, Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. Funerals today. Holiday Ruth Lewis Campbell, 91, Arcola, noon, in Arcola United Methodist Church. Porty Brent Allen, 48, Decatur, 11 a.m. in Moore and Goebel Funeral Home. Puckett Marianne, 81, Panna, 10 a.m. in St. Patrick Catholic Church, Panna. Shoemaker Donald A., 85, Decatur, 1 p.m. in Macon County Memorial Park. Zucco Catherine Mary, Peg, 102, Mount Zion, 3 p.m. in Our Lady of the Holy Spirit Catholic Church. Now we'll turn to the obituaries from Sunday, March 6th. Decatur, Donovan Dean Durland, 86, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Thursday, March 3rd, 2016. Funeral services will be from 10 a.m. Will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, March 9th, 2016, at Brindlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois, with visitation 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, March 8th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Knob Cemetery, Tower Hill, Illinois. Memorials will be made to the Decatur YMCA. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brindlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.brindlingerandearl.com. Ina Jean Garrison, Saragordo. Saragordo, Ina Jean Garrison, 89, left this earthly life to meet her Lord and reunite with her husband, parents, two brothers, Clifford and Milford, oldest sister Mildred, and twin sister Enos, on Tuesday, March 1st, 2016, at 11.05 p.m. at Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello, Illinois. Funeral services will be 12 p.m. Tuesday, March 8, 2016, at Brindlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation from 10 a.m. until service time. Burial will be in Cerro Gordo Cemetery, Cerro Gordo, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Ena Jean Burton Garrison Memorial Fund at Beaumont Bank. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.brintlingerandearl.com. Ruth Louise Lois Campbell Holliday, age 91, Arcola, passed away peacefully Thursday, March 3, 2016, at Carl Hospital with family at her side. Ruth was born February 11, 1925, in Chesterville, Illinois, to Charles Woodrow and Ursula Hendrickson Campbell. She married Robert Holliday on November 24, 1944, in San Bernardino, California, where Bob was stationed during World War II. In 1947, they made their home in rural Arcola. The funeral service honoring her life will be held at 12 p.m., Monday, March 7, 2016, at the Arcola United Methodist Church with Reverend Vince Roan officiating. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until time of service. Graveside services will be held at 1:30 p.m. at the Arcola Cemetery. The family is being assisted by Schrader Funeral Home. The family would like to say a special thank you to the caring staff at Arcola Carriage Crossing. Memorials in Ruth's honor are suggested to the Arcola United Methodist Church or the Arcola Carriage Crossing. Online condolences to the family may be sent to www.hilligossshradierfh.com. Joyce Smart, Argenta. Joyce Smart, 88, of Argenta, died Thursday, March 3, 2016. Following Joyce's wishes, there will be no services. Cremation rites will be accorded. Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home is assisting the family. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.brintlingerandearl.com. Jesse E. Thomas, Decatur. Jesse E. Thomas, Jr., 79, formerly of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Friday, February 26, 2016, in Fort Myers, Florida. He is survived by his wife, Betsy Thomas, of Fort Myers, Florida, daughters Sue Weigers, Fort Myers, Florida, Joe, Mark, Decatur, Illinois, Carolyn John Garrison, Rogersville, Tennessee, stepdaughter Michael Dooley of England, 8 grandchildren, 3 grandchildren. Billy Sue Smith Works of Decatur departed life this on Monday, February 29th, 2016, at her residence. Services celebrating her life will be held 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 8th, 2016, at the Mount Olive Baptist Church with visitation 1 hour before service. Burial Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service, www.walkerfs.com. The family would like to give special thanks to Help at Home Healthcare. And now we're going to cover the Saturday, March 5th obituaries, starting with Sherry L. Chambers, 77, of Decatur, Illinois. Sherry L. Chambers, 77, of Decatur, passed away March 1st, 2016, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur, Illinois. Memorial services will be 5 p.m. Sunday, March 6, 2016, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois. Interment will be in Hillcrest Cemetery, Bluffs, Illinois, at a later date. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.brintlingerandearl.com. Betty L. Gross, Decatur. Betty L. Gross, 75, of Decatur, formerly of Clinton and Cerro Gordo, Illinois, passed away Wednesday, March 2, 2016, at Fairhaven's Christian Home. Memorial services will be 3 p.m. Sunday, March 6, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois. Burial will be in Cerro Gordo Cemetery, Cerro Gordo, Illinois, at a later date. Memorials may be made to the family. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.brintlingerandearl.com. Brent Allen Porty, Decatur. Brent Allen Porty, 48, of Sullivan, lifelong resident of Decatur, passed away Wednesday, March 2, 2016, at St. Mary's Hospital with his family by his side. The services to celebrate the life of Brent will be at 11 a.m. Monday, March 7, 2016, at Morin and Gobel Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Monday before the service at the funeral home. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to Sullivan Healthcare. The family of Brent Allen Porty is being served by Morin and Gobel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, 2101 North Monroe Street, Decatur, Illinois, 62526. Send condolences to the family at morangobel.com, morangobel.com. Catherine Mary Peg Zucco, Mount Zion. Catherine Mary Peg Zucco, 102 of Mount Zion, passed away peacefully in her sleep March 2, 2016, at the Glenwood Assisted Living Facility where she had resided for the past 7 years. Mass of Christian burial will be Monday afternoon, March 7th at 3 p.m. at Our Lady of the Holy Spirit Catholic Church with Father John Burnett presiding. Visitation will be an hour before Mass begins. Burial will be in Mount Zion Township Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials be made to the Mount Zion Foundation for Quality Education. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, is assisting the family with the arrangements. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family at www.dawson-wyckoff.com. So that's dawson-wyckoff.com. Parks worker earns Mattoon citizen honors. Mattoon. Kurt Stretch has long been known as a go-to person for helping organize youth sports, Bagelfest Lightworks, and other events at city ball fields and parks. So the Mattoon Chamber of Commerce presented him with the 2016 Citizen of the Year Award Saturday evening. Stretch, who is superintendent of the Mattoon Parks and Recreation Department, received this honor during the Chamber's annual dinner from his friend Bob Jones. Kurt Stretch is a doer. If you want something done, who do you call? Jones asked those at the diner. The crowd responded by shouting, Kurt Stretch! The Citizen of the Year does more for Mattoon and Coles County than just about anybody else, but he always operates below the radar, Jones said. He added that Stretch is humble and dedicated in his parks job, and as a volunteer in the community. He knows how to organize, he knows how to get volunteers working, and he knows how to get the job done, Jones said. Jones said Stretch has played key roles in bringing Cal Ripken youth baseball tournaments to town, earning Mattoon the nickname of the baseball capital of the world, and starting the annual Lightworks display of Christmas lights 25 years ago at Peterson Park, and hosting the annual Bagel Fest at Peterson Park. Stretch has always been a dedicated caretaker for the city's recreation facilities, he said. Jones said those who work with Ball Diamonds in other cities and on college campuses have visited Mattoon to learn from Stretch's experience. Jones said Mattoon's high-quality youth sports facilities have drawn many tournaments over the years. He said these tournaments have generated sales for local motels and restaurants and sales tax revenue for the city. Upon receiving the Citizen of the Year award, Stretch said those who participate in tournaments or tour the recreation facilities are typically amazed at what we get done in Mattoon. Mattoon has a lot of good people and a lot of good volunteers who make my job easy, Stretch said. Saturday evening, the Mattoon Chamber also presented Mary Beth White with Ambassadors Club recognition for her volunteerism at chamber events. Madigan may pursue lawsuit to force state to enact coal mine rules. St. Louis. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office is considering legal action against the state's Natural Resources Agency for what prosecutors call a failure to follow the terms in a court-brokered plan to toughen oversight of coal mines. The tougher regulations were part of broader reforms touted with much fanfare 2 years by the administration of former Governor Pat Quinn. They followed criticism by environmentalists who alleged the State Department of Natural Resources was too cozy with mining companies and other businesses it regulates. The rules included a requirement that regulators provide earlier citizen notification of new mine applications and that the mine permit applicants be available to answer questions at public hearings. But 2 years later, the new rules have not been enacted, and the Resources Agency now wants to package the new rules with other pending changes that some environmental groups say actually weaken public participation. It is frustrating that the new rules are not yet in place, said Ann Spillane, Madigan's chief of staff. It is past time for the department to stop delaying the implementation of new rules and to fully comply with the court order by allowing meaningful public participation. The threat of renewed legal action comes as the coal industry is battling economic and political challenges that threaten many jobs in central and southern Illinois. The DNR is now overseen by the administration of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, a former venture capitalist who defeated the Democrat Quinn in 2014 after the new regulations had been announced. The state has 15 pending requests for new mines, permit revisions, or renewals that could be affected by the new requirements government records show. The reforms adopted by the DNR in 2014 settled a lawsuit by Madigan, a Democrat, over the agency's 2007 approval of a surface mine near the central Illinois town of Banner amid resident complaints about potential threats to their water supply. IDNR eventually rejected the permit, but Illinois prosecutors continued to press their case against the agency, resulting in a March 214 consent agreement in Sangamon County Circuit Court. The head of the DNR at the time calls the reforms the most recent steps to further restore the integrity of this agency and allow for more public participation as we work towards becoming a national model for transparency. Since then, the Illinois Coal Association has petitioned the DNR to revise the so-called Banner Rules to better address industry concerns, including a change that would only allow state hiring officers, not citizens, to question the mine applicants at public hearings. Coal Association President Phil Gonnett says the Banner Rule did not take the industry's concerns into account, arguing that the settlement was politically motivated during Quinn's re-election bid. The incumbent governor earned the endorsement of environmentalists during his campaign after the reforms were announced. The agreed order was developed without any input from the staff at IDNR that actually work on coal mine permits, Gonnett said. We believe these regulations go far beyond what's required under federal law. IDNR spokesman Chris Young said that efficiency is behind the pace of this agency's rulemaking efforts, not in any industry-led effort to obstruct them. Young said the agency sought guidance on the rules from the Federal Office of Surface Mining, which responded in February of 2015 that it found nothing of concern. IDNR also sought additional input from the coal industry, environmentalists, and other interested parties on not only the Banner Rules, but three other sets of administrative changes. He said that both the federal government and the legislators' Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, which still must approve the final revisions, would prefer the changes be considered together as one package. But Vicky Thomas, the Legislative Committee's executive director, said that none of us have had that conversation with the Natural Resources Department. Young did not respond to an AP request to interview officials in IDNR's Land Reclamation Division, which oversees coal mines, or agency director Wayne Rosenthal, a farmer and former Republican legislator appointed by Rauner to lead the agency in January of 2015. A Rauner spokeswoman on Sunday said that the Natural Resources Agency is working diligently on the rules as it awaits a final review from the federal government. The consent agreement did not stipulate a deadline to adopt the changes, but Sierra Club activist Joyce Blumenschein accused the state agency of holding these rules hostage. Former Assistant Attorney General Thomas Davis, who led the Banner Rule negotiations before his 2014 retirement, attributed the agency's foot-dragging to what he called its dissatisfaction with both the prolonged legal fight and the terms of the settlement. My perception is the department wasn't really happy to have to do this in the first place, he said. Lawmakers seek funding for safer school routes. Springfield. Amid a drawn-out fight over the budget, two Republicans are among the state legislators calling attention to plans seeking more funding to improve street safety for students walking to school. It's an issue that needs attention despite the state's messy finances, supporters of the idea say, given that nearly five Illinois children are hit by cars every day within a block of a school, according to the Safe Routes to School program. To highlight the need, Springfield Republican Representatives Tim Butler and Sarah Wojcicki Jimenez walked from the state capitol to a nearby school in downtown Springfield with about a dozen supporters, including parents, last week. The Illinois legislation, sponsored by Democratic State Representative Elaine Nekritz of Northbrook, seeks $5 million overall for the program, with a combination of state and federal aid. But since the state has been operating without a budget since July 1st, it's unclear where they would get the money. Governor Bruce Rauner, a first-term Republican and the Democrat-controlled legislator, remained deadlocked over a spending plan. Were the bill to pass, the state would foot $2 million of the costs. The state's Safe Routes to School program has a goal to promote improvements to streets and sidewalks to create a safer environment for kids. During the tour, participants During the tour, participants commented on how difficult some sidewalks were to walk on. Across the state, advocates say street hazards include incomplete sidewalks and broken crosswalk signals. They're uneven, and some of the older trees have broken through the concrete, so it creates a walking and biking hazards for the kids, or even for parents that might be coming down with strollers, said Brian Finn, director of the Downtown Springfield YMCA, about the streets near the facility. The Safe Routes to School program has paid nearly $50 million since 2005 for 500 projects that improve streets, add bike lanes, and address gang violence by enlisting volunteers to accompany students during their walks. Students are feeling unsafe predominantly because of gang violence, said Simone Alexander of Enlace Chicago, a community action group in the Little Village neighborhood. That is not the only thing happening in Little Village, but when we talk about safe routes to school, that certainly bumps up to the number one issue families are having getting to and from school. The bill is HB 2623. Illini finished in double overtime. State College, Pennsylvania. Brandon Taylor had plenty to smile about after capping his best season in a Penn State uniform as the Nittany Lions secured their first ever first round bye in the Big Ten tournament with an 86-79 double overtime win over Illinois on Sunday. "I think we have fresh legs for the most part," Taylor said. "I just think that every huddle we had was positive." Shep Gardner scored 22 points and Taylor added 21 and 11 rebounds for the Nittany Lions, 16-15, 7-11 Big Ten, who snapped a two-game losing streak and set mark for their most conference wins under head coach Patrick Chambers. Josh Reeves added 13 points and Donovan Jack chipped on 10 for the Nittany Lions, who saw a 10-point lead turn into a 1-point deficit with less than 2 minutes to play. Malcolm Hill scored 24 of his 39 points in the second half and added 13 rebounds for the Fighting Illini, 13-18, 5-13. Caleb Lewis added 10 points for the Illini, who outscored Penn State 22-12 over the final 8:49 of regulation. Penn State led for 16-13 of the first half, including the first 9:14, but never by more than 6 points. A shootout ensued down the stretch as the team swapped the lead 6 times before Garner nailed his third three-pointer and converted a soaring layup in the closing minute to give Penn State a 37-36 halftime lead. Garner finished the first half with 11 points and made 3 of Penn State's 5 three-pointers. Reeves, who set a career high in points, started hot in the back end too. He scored 6 of his 8 first half points and added 2 blocks in the first 5:30, but his minutes were cut after drawing his second foul with 5:13 left. With Reeves in foul trouble early, Taylor got going midway through the second half. He ran off 7 straight points, capped by a turnaround jumper through traffic that put Penn State up 53-43 with a 12:15 left. Taylor's leadership, his consistency all year long, he got us a big-time double-double when all the chips were ours to take. One of those make-or-break games, Penn State coach Patrick Chambers said, and he's put this program on his back. Hill did the same for his team. Sparked by his fluid fadeaway shots, Illinois mounted a 19-8 run capped by a pair of Hill free throws to take a 64-63 lead with a minute 58 left. That group that played basically from the 8-minute mark for the rest of the game, which was the last 18 minutes, really, really, really competed, Illinois coach John Gross said. "We had some shots that we missed that I thought were pretty good ones, particularly in the second overtime." The team swapped the lead twice more before Garner tied at 67-67 with a layup that drew a foul with 14 seconds left. He missed the potential go-ahead free throw, but made up for it in the first overtime with a go-ahead three-pointer in the waning seconds. Illinois forced a second overtime with 2 Hill free throws, but Penn State dominated the glass, pulling down 7 rebounds to Illinois' 4 in the final period. Jordan Dickerson grabbed the biggest one and kicked the ball out to a wide-open Peyton Banks, who nailed a three-pointer to give Penn State the lead for good in the second overtime. Penn State closed out the game, making 9 of 10 from the line. Tip-ins. Illinois, the Illini made just 4 of 16 three-pointers. Kendrick Nunn was 1 for 6 from three-point range, while Jalen Coleman-Lanz was 1 for 4, and Hill made 1 of 3. Penn State Reeves continued to blossom despite missing six games with mononucleosis midway through the season. He pulled down three of his seven rebounds in the overtime periods and added a steal in the first overtime. U.S. Representative Shimkus faces a challenge from McCarter. The Republican primary in Illinois' 15th congressional district could come down to whether voters are looking for continuity or change when they head to the polls March 15th. U.S. Republican John Shimkus of Collinsville is seeking election to the seat for an 11th term. He faces State Senator Kyle McCarter of Lebanon. No one is running for the Democratic nomination. Shimkus, a West Point graduate and Army veteran, first elected to Congress in 1996, said his experience and seniority make him the strongest candidate to represent the district, which covers a large swath of East Central and Southern Illinois. My re-election would be valued highly by my constituents, based on my work ethic, Shimkus said. His efforts in Congress have focused on energy, agriculture, healthcare, and telecommunications issues, he said. Nothing legislative success is including measures supporting biodiesel and ethanol, designating 911 as the universal emergency number for cell phones and allowing for automatic external defibrillators in schools. Shimkus said that if reelected, he has an opportunity to become chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which deals with many of those issues and would play a key role in Republican efforts to repeal and replace President Barack Obama's health care law. The veteran congressman has a major advantage in fundraising, with $1.37 million on hand as of December 31st, compared with McCarter's $87,434, according to federal records compiled by the Center for Responsive Politics. Shimkus also has racked up endorsements from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, National Rifle Association, Illinois Farm Bureau, and National Right to Life Committee. That's a statement by these groups that you are doing a good job representing their members in this area, Shimkus said. That is my district. Those groups are my district. But in an election year, when there's strong anti-establishment sentiment, at least in the presidential race, McCarter, a businessman who served in the Illinois Senate since 2009 and has the backing of conservative groups such as the Club for Growth, is characterizing Shimkus as a career politician who broke a promise he made when first elected to limit himself to 2 6-year terms. Shimkus said that he changed his mind on the term limits a decade ago after being asked by President George W. Bush to reconsider and speaking with voters in the district who've had a chance every 2 years to remove him from office. McCarter, who lives just outside the district, called it a bait and switch, pledging not to run for re-election to his Senate seat when his term is up in 2018 if he loses the race, and to self-impose term limits if he wins. The people have a very clear choice here, he said. They have a career politician that's been in for 20 years, or they've got a businessman like myself with 25 years of experience. McCarter counts among his successes in the Senate a measure approved last year banning synthetic drugs, which he calls the toughest in the nation, and noted that he's been pushing for business-friendly changes to workers' compensation laws. The challenger is especially critical of Shimkus's December vote in favor of an omnibus spending bill that some conservatives contend allowed federal funding for Planned Parenthood to continue. Some House Republicans sought to tie the bill to a measure defunding the health care provider, but it was left out of the final bipartisan deal. I would have fought harder against this, McCarter said. I would have been willing to shut down the government over it. Shimkus said the bill provided no funding for Planned Parenthood. Senator McCarter is wrong on the vote, he said. I have not voted to fund Planned Parenthood. The candidates agree that the jobs and the economy are major issues in the race, and each argues that he is more qualified in those areas. McCarter's case rests on his business career and his efforts on issues such as workers' compensation and unemployment insurance reforms. Shimkus, meanwhile, said his key position on the Energy and Commerce Committee, including his shot at the chairmanship, allows him to take on critical issues for the district, such as pushing back against what he called the president's war on coal. Sick pay lacking for low-wage workers, Chicago. Amid the swelling national conversation about income inequality comes in new report spotlighting that the lack of mandatory paid sick leave in the U.S. disproportionately burdens low-wage workers, including the vast majority of food service employees. 40% of employed U.S. adults, or about 51 million people, get no paid sick days, forcing them to choose between a paycheck and time off to nurse the flu, take care of a sick family member, or visit the doctor, and sometimes risking the loss of their job, according to a report released last month by the nonprofit Institute for Women's Policy Research. Those who do have sick time barely use it. 45% of workers with paid sick days had not used any in the previous 12 months. 5% had used 11 or more days. Among those with paid sick days who took fewer than 11 days off, this group was the focus to eliminate outliers with extended medical leaves. The median usage was 2.1 days. Employees without sick days took a median of 1.6 days off due to illness or injury, suggesting that some are going to work sick for going preventative care or sending sick children to school, the report said. Long criticized for being the only advanced economy not to mandate that employers provide any type of paid time off, the U.S. has left it to states and cities to implement their own laws. Access to paid sick leave varies widely among groups, according to the new report, which uses data from the 2014 National Health Survey. Less than a fifth of food preparation and service workers have access to paid sick days, while close to 90% of employees who work in computers, architecture, and engineering do. Other occupations short on sick days are personal care service, which includes jobs such as manicurists and child care workers, and farming, fishing, forestry. In those two categories, a quarter of workers get paid sick days. The lower you are on the totem pole, the less likely it is that you can take a sick day off. Two-thirds of supervisors get sick days, compared with fewer than half of non-supervisory workers, while 86% of workers who make more than $65,000 a year get paid sick leave, less than a quarter who make less than $15,000 a year do. Among the part-time workers in the lowest earnings bracket, just 14% get the perk. This has been Kess with the Decatur Herald and Review. I look forward to reading with you again soon.